Hi there, folks. Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony coming to you from New Zealand. And with me today, I have regular guest Leo Hyman from Georgia in the US. And it's been a little closer together this time, our show, than usual. We usually have slightly more spaced out, but I really wanted to have Leo back quickly because the last time we did a show, I thought was so important for people to hear. And I have a feeling today will be the same. So welcome back, Leo. It's really good to be back with you.
Yes, thanks for having me, Tony.
Yeah, and you've been sharing with me that you've had a dose of the flu, so it's good to see you back in action.
Absolutely. Yeah, my voice is still a little bit weak, but we'll do the best we can.
Yeah, absolutely. So where do you want to take us to start with? I know there's been an awful lot of things going on. In fact, you wrote an article a few days ago on your leohyman.com website, just a roundup of the things, and that was 4 or 5 days ago. So much important stuff happening in such a short space of time, so I'll let you run where you want to run with it.
Well, I encourage people to look at that piece. I believe it was posted Friday, so it's, a few days old, but it was, several days worth of news packed into one article. And with my analysis, and where do we start right now? I mean, we've got President Trump threatening to put ground troops into Venezuela. He just did another strike off the coast of Venezuela today. I believe Secretary of Defense Hegseth said that they hit two or three vessels this time, and killed 14 people, injured one. It's a pretty much a daily occurrence now. Roughly every day or every other day at the least, we're hearing about another so-called narco-terrorist vessel, which happens to usually be a small outboard motor boat, typically unarmed or lightly armed, if at all. And the U.S., the powerful U.S. Navy, blowing this little boat out of the water and killing everyone aboard. That tends to be the scenario repeated now. I think this was the 10th or 11th time that this has gone down since around mid-September. So it's definitely heating up, and it's getting ready to go to the next stage. Trump is preparing, I'm told, to send in roughly 10,000 troops from the U.S. Army, perhaps another 2,500 Marines. This is to supposedly overthrow the government and take over a country that is, the size of Britain, France, and Belgium combined. I mean, this is no small country. And I think we're just assuming wrongly, in my opinion, I think this is going to be a big mistake to assume that they're all just going to lay down their arms and welcome us as liberators. I think that's the attitude from those in the Trump administration, but rarely does that happen. As we've seen in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, people do fight back for their country, even if they're not happy with their current government. That doesn't mean that they want the United States to come in and change it for them. So I think a lot of people are going to be surprised at the quagmire that could become for the United States of America in Venezuela. I know they're talking a lot about drugs and stopping the flow of drugs from that country to America, but that is really a sham of an excuse for something else, something much bigger, because hardly any drugs come to this country from Venezuela, certainly not fentanyl. Senator Rand Paul spoke about this over the weekend, I believe Sunday, when he said that zero fentanyl comes to the United States from Venezuela, and these so-called drug boats are not on their way to America because a boat of that size would need to refuel 22 times to make it that distance from Venezuela to the shores of America. So these boats are not coming to America. Possibly they're heading to some other country where the drugs are handed off to some middleman and continued on their way to America. I don't know. But we're given no evidence. That is the entire problem with this operation. We're just supposed to take Pete Hegseth's word for it, President Trump's word for it, because they said these were narco-terrorists on board these small speedboats. We're supposed to believe them. But even if that's true, you know, this is not following international norms for how to deal with drug smugglers, drug traffickers. If we suspect that drugs are on one of these boats, we have the right to stop them in international waters, board their vessels, search them, and then deal with them appropriately. But you don't just indiscriminately blow boats out of the water that have not fired upon you as a U.S. military vessel. This is not going to work out well for America, I don't think, in the long run, when we just sort of dismiss all the rules of international law and make up the new rules as we go. You know, I just don't see how that's good for America in the public eye. And I think, you know, invading a country after you've done this for a few weeks, we're going to find out just how popular that policy is once our troops get inside Venezuela. The other issue that concerns me is, even if all goes well, according to the best estimates of our military experts, and let's say we do topple the government in a matter of days or weeks, and we are welcomed as liberators, okay, what's next? What is the larger purpose and the end game and the end result of us being in Venezuela, a country that we will now be 100% responsible for? You know, when we can't even seem to manage our own affairs in this country, we're in the fourth week now of a government shutdown. We're going to take over another country's government and try to run it. Something just rubs me the wrong way about that. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, it seems to be that's the way the U.S. has gone so many times in the past, too. It's like they... You have to ask why Venezuela, because, I mean, there's a ton of other countries that are bad and doing things that, you know, are subversive and so on, but you don't go into them, into those countries necessarily and invade them and so on. So why Venezuela? That would be one of the questions I want to know the answer.
Well, I think the reason, the answer to that question is fairly obvious. They have the largest oil deposits of any country in the world, yep, or so we're told. They have gold mines. Yep. They have lithium, rare earth minerals. They have emeralds, I'm told. Have you ever tried to buy an emerald necklace or an emerald ring or even price them, Tony? Emeralds are extremely valuable. Yeah. I guess they're hard to mine. To mine out of the earth, but once you get them, they're extremely valuable. I'm told that there are emerald mines in Venezuela. So we're talking, as well as some diamonds. So you got diamonds, gold, emeralds, oil, natural gas, and lithium. These are just the ones I'm aware of. It is one of the wealthiest natural resources-wise countries in the world. And I think it's pretty obvious that President Trump is after these types of resources. He's just in the last few days signed rare earth mineral agreements with, you know, Japan, Australia, Malaysia. He signed one with Ukraine. He's been talking with other countries about this. He's been threatening China because it is saying that it's going to limit coming out of these minerals from its country in a sort of this trade war back and forth argument with Trump. China is not laying down and rolling over like most countries in this whole fight for resources that we see going on. Like, I've personally never seen it so intense in my entire lifetime. Countries fighting over resources. It all goes back, I think, to the technology that is being used in both the civilian and military markets right now, with AI taking over everything. They need these rare earth magnets and rare earth minerals. And of course, gold and silver and precious metals are more valuable than ever. We've seen what's been going on with the prices just skyrocketing to record levels of gold and silver. So it's well known that President Trump wants to dominate in this area. So anyone who thinks that he's really going into Venezuela to stop the drug flow, you know, that is a really, really naive person. I don't know how else to describe it. Gullible, naive, and frankly, willing to believe anything.
And that then takes me to the Ukraine, another country rich in natural resources, which is obviously a hotbed of contention with the Russia-Ukraine situation as well. And so that's not about protecting peace and democracy either, I don't believe at all. So that's another subject you've covered extensively, obviously, is the situation with the Ukraine and Russia. And there's been a lot of recent developments there.
Yeah, we keep seeing a back and forth scenario there with President Trump. One day it seems like he's on Ukraine's side. The next day he seems like he's on Russia's side. But to me, I think that he is on NATO's side. That's not a popular view. A lot of the experts I read will be telling us things like, oh, President Trump is trying to, you know, back away from NATO, and nothing could be further from the truth. Yeah. The way I see it, he may want the Europeans to shoulder a larger percentage of the burden of the cost of NATO, but I don't think he's in any way, shape, or form prepared or willing to abandon NATO, like we're told. The United States is currently, I guess, making a lot of money selling weapons to NATO, which they turn around and sell or give to Ukraine. Mm. Now, I'm not sure exactly how this works, because the United States is by far the biggest funder of the whole NATO enterprise. So when we say NATO is, you know, buying our weapons, where is that money really coming from? Is it just the United States buying its own weapons, or, you know, or at least shouldering the lion's share of that cost? I would posit that it probably is. But one way or another, President Trump has managed to continue the Biden policy of sending endless weapons to Ukraine. Yeah. Now, he's been talking for weeks, over a month now, about threatening to send Tomahawk cruise missiles there, which would be, in the eyes of many experts, two steps up the escalation ladder.
Yeah.
There's also a possibility that he could expand the range, allow them to expand the range of the existing ATACMS and HIMARS missile systems, which right now they're about 350 kilometers. They could be extended with some tweaking, is my understanding. But they still would be not compared to the Tomahawks, which are, you know, we're talking 14,000-15,000 kilometer range. If he does this and sends the Tomahawks, I think we will see the gloves come off on the Russian side. We've already seen that to an extent, where they are now vastly increasing their attacks, much more aggressive ballistic missile attacks, drone attacks on Ukrainian infrastructure, particularly the energy sector. We've seen blackouts coming across Ukraine due to these attacks. This is Russia giving Ukraine a taste of its own medicine, because for weeks and upon weeks, Ukraine was attacking Russia's energy infrastructure, bombing, you know, with drones, the Russian oil refineries. And so now Putin is doing the same to Ukraine, and we hear Zelensky, you know, just crying us a river, saying he needs the Tomahawks, he needs this, he needs that, to counter the Russian aggression, which is really hilarious, because, like I say, they're just getting a taste of their own medicine. They've been doing the same thing to Russia, and now Putin is doing it to them. I expect this war to continue dragging on, incrementally being escalated a step at a time. I don't think they're willing to go like two steps up the ladder at one time. It's going to be this continued but steady escalation, I think, for at least another year, possibly two, before we see Western ground troops finally on the ground in Ukraine. That will, in my opinion, happen. It's just a matter of when. I don't expect it anytime soon. It definitely will not be this year. But I think as we get into around mid 2026, late 2026, and possibly more likely 2027, we will see Western, European for sure, if not American, troops on the ground fighting Russians. And this is a very dangerous scenario, because we know this is the same area of the world where World War One started, World War Two started. And the globalists, I think, want it. They want World War Three, so they figure, hey, this is the best place to start it. The problem is they're not really prepared yet, the Europeans, to put those troops on the ground. They're poorly trained. They're not organized. They got all these different languages, language barriers to deal with. When you're talking about NATO, you know, 34 member states speaking, I don't know how many different languages. It's a much more complicated scenario than, say, what the Russians have to deal with on their side. They have a much more integrated system, although they have figured out a way to integrate North Korean troops into their battle plans. They're certainly not, you know, dealing with dozens of different languages and different command structures and all of that. So you have to have a unified command if you're going to war. And I think that is the challenge for NATO. That's one thing if you're defending yourselves and you're defending a block of countries, but it's a whole nother ballgame when you talk about launching an offensive operation against another country like Russia, and you're dealing with all of these different command structures that are present within NATO. They have a lot of work to do. I say that's why I say we're at least a year away from full-on World War III between NATO and Russia, simply because the European multi-ethnic nature of NATO is not yet prepared to take on that. Now, they would love to, don't get me wrong. If you listen to their rhetoric, I think they would prefer to go to war tomorrow. They can't. They're salivating at the thought of fighting Russia in World War III. Problem is, they're just not ready militarily yet. They're not ready from a military command structure point of view, nor are they ready from their military industrial complex. They're still being outproduced by Russia 3-1 on munitions. And so that depends a lot on Germany. They are the center of the military industrial complex for NATO, United States and Germany. Thirdly, I guess it would be the UK. But all three of these countries are ramping up their munitions industries as we speak. But it's going to take a while. It's not going to be ready tomorrow, next week, or next month to take on Russia.
So the whole thing is a globalist move. I think, you know, there are powers that be that are bigger than any of the governments individually or the presidents or whatever, and they have an overall plan. And I guess another huge part of this plan, a different aspect of it, is the whole AI and robotics and integrating all of that, not only into the battlefield, but that's of course part of it, but then into all of our general lives with surveillance and everything else that goes along with the whole move towards what Klaus Schwab called the fourth industrial revolution, which, you know, many of us just call a new world order, or, you know, call it whatever you want. But this whole move towards locking us all into the system, is that's happening really fast. And I notice that, say, both Facebook or Meta and Amazon are talking about laying off large numbers of people and automating their services as well, which means, you know, that they're getting people sucked into this endless entertainment kind of a lifestyle with less people actually going to be doing the work and more robots and AI. So the whole thing of us becoming useless eaters is more and more on the cards in a fairly short space of time.
Absolutely. Amazon just came out and confirmed today the report that was out yesterday. They're going to lay off 14,000 of their corporate staff immediately. And over the next 7 or 8 years, I think by 2033, they're going to replace 600,000 jobs with AI. And so what people aren't thinking of, and even these corporate executives, I don't think have thought this through, because if all major corporations are working on ways to replace their human workers with machines and AI, robots and AI, you know, and I think it's safe to assume they are. I mean, this announcement by Amazon is by no means an outlier. All the major corporations are working on a plan to use algorithms and AI to do the work for them. And if you've got algorithms, robots, and AI to do the work, well, that means you don't need humans anymore. And they're all working on a master plan to replace 30 to 50% of their workforces. And I'm talking about the huge companies now, the very, very large employers like Walmart, Target, IBM, all of the Silicon Valley tech companies, the big ones. Meta, you mentioned them. Microsoft, they're laying off people. Ford and GM. GM just announced they're closing their tech center here in Roswell, Georgia. You know, that's like 800 and some employees. They're going to eliminate half of them immediately and the other half by mid-2026. And they just closed another of their tech centers. I think it was in San Antonio, or no, Phoenix. So they've closed Phoenix, and now they're closing the Georgia. That leaves them with one in Michigan, Warren, Michigan, and one in Austin, Texas. And so all of these big, huge companies are doing this. The tech workers, which this used to be the holy grail of U.S. employment, right? We were big into tech, and we told our young people to go to college and learn computers. You'll be set for life. You know, if you can read code and write code and stuff like that, you're going to be set, you know, making a six-figure income for the rest of your life, paid vacations, the whole nine yards, right? big pension when you retire. All of this, you can throw it out the door now because AI is replacing the very people that we promised this was the way to go. This was the future. Go into technology. Well, we don't need you anymore. We also don't need most white. We won't need CPAs. We won't need lawyers. We won't need school teachers. We won't need hardly anyone in the white collar workforce in the next 8 to 10 years, because it's all going to be AI doing the work. Now, this is the question. This is where I don't think they've thought this through. If Amazon, General Motors, Ford, all of the big retail, Target, Walmart, if they all replace 75% of their workforce, their high-paid workforce, I'm not talking about the people on the ground behind the cash register. I'm talking about the office workers, the ones who are making, the six figures. If they're all replaced, who's going to buy their products? If people are all losing their, if 75% of your high wage earners are being replaced and will no longer have a job, who's going to buy the products? Amazon? You know, this is not computing, no pun intended, but it doesn't add up. So I think something's got to give here. They're either going to find this out before it's too late and maybe backtrack on some of this stuff, or they're just going to go headlong with it. And they're going to find out the hard way that there's no longer any market for their products. It's going to be so tiny compared to what it is now because nobody can afford to buy this stuff.
And I mean, you've got self-checkouts in the existing buildings becoming more and more, you know, the Walmarts and the Giant. And
banks. Banks is another one. They're replacing their tellers and all of their human beings as well.
Well, that's right. So they don't need people in most of these jobs. You just need a couple of people to monitor something and the rest of them are expendable. Maybe they'll give people a universal basic income or maybe they'll employ people to go to the Ukraine and Russian border as soldiers without some protection and we'll give them a pea shooter. so that they don't come back.
I've often said that's one of the boxes that World War III would check,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
They know that we need fewer people in the yeah. world. We have too many useless eaters, as Yuval Harari says. Yeah. And like he said, the only thing worse than feeling oppressed as a worker or an employee is feeling useless and not needed. And yeah. This is going to play with people's minds. All of the lies they've been told their whole life, you know, work hard, get an education, the American dream, it's all lies now.
Yeah.
And there is going to be a lot of social upheaval as a result. Now, how do the globalists and the elites deal with that? I think we're seeing how they deal with that. They're going to align the nations against each other in a major world war, and they're going to wipe out tens of millions, if not billions.
Yes, unfortunately, it does seem to be heading in that way. And at this time, you know, the AI thing is happening so quickly and the data centers being built so rapidly. And, of course, the power consumption that they're going to use, that has to come from somewhere. And so prices escalate. And it's just a vicious cycle for anybody that's trying to make ends meet, and doesn't matter if it's in America or anywhere else. And you look at the economies all over the world, and they're all in trouble.
Absolutely. And Bank of America just came out with a big study today, Tony, on how the AI revolution, with all the data centers being built out, and I believe they said there's 4,000 data centers already up and running across America. This is causing a huge drain on electricity, and electric power rates are going up. Mm. It's not just a rumor. It's not just a forecast. It's already happening in direct. This is what President Trump and all of the people promoting this, you know, Operation Stargate and the yeah. building out of this AI data center infrastructure. None of them want to talk about this, that they are increasing the cost of living on average everyday Americans. By driving up the cost of electricity on the one hand, and also water rates. These data centers use humongous amounts of electric power, and many of them also use water to cool their servers at these big data farms. So they don't want to talk about this. They want to make it sound like it's, you know, just the next best thing since, you know, apple pie about, oh, your community's getting a data center. It's going to, you're going to be a high tech community now. There's going to be lots of good paying jobs and blah, 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 blah. It's all lies. What's going to happen in reality is there's going to be very few jobs because these data centers don't employ many people. And it's going to drive up the cost of living. The cost of land's going to go up, the cost of water, the cost of electricity, the cost of even natural gas. It's all going up at exponential rates, and we haven't seen the beginning of it yet, Tony.
I think they'd sell you the lie. Look, this is going to create lots of new jobs building when we build these data centers, but what they're not really saying is there'll be lots of temporary jobs in construction while they build them, these right. construction workers, and then once they're built, there's no need for any of the people. So it's like a sleight of hand, you know. Temporary employment for some that, you know, but not for the long term.
100%. And then they also don't want to get into, okay, what does a data center actually do?
Yeah.
Okay. It's going to increase the power of artificial intelligence and take your jobs.
Yeah.
Not only is it going to take your jobs, but it's also going to set up a surveillance state yes. infrastructure so that the powers that be will have control over every facet of your life, watching you 24/7, everything you buy, every place you go, how much meat are you consuming, how much energy are you consuming. Also that they can implement a coming carbon tax, right, on every person, and establish a net value for every person. How much are you creating, or how much are you, what is your output versus your input to society? And this is called technocracy, where they put a dollar value on every human life based on how much resources they're drawing out of the system, compared to how much they're putting in creative value or building something of value. And so what does that say about our future? I think we're going to see this country go along the lines of Canada with euthanasia, which they are putting people down over there in Canada for flimsier and flimsier reasons. And they want to even use the euthanasia against children now in that country, children with, you know, so-called terminal illnesses or what have you. We've seen how that gets abused over there. It's anything but terminal illnesses. You can end your life now just for being depressed in the nation of Canada. And that's just another way for the globalists to whittle away at a population that is not just too large, but not made up of the type of people that they want. Okay. Senior citizens, people who are not productive to society anymore, poof, get rid of them. You know, this is the technocratic mindset that we see being implemented really on a global scale right now.
Well, New Zealand, we've got the euthanasia thing here too. And I was shocked to hear of a case just recently. Somebody was telling me of somebody they knew who had something like a brain tumor or something like that, and they had a bad episode with that. So then they decided to book themselves into the, you know, the death thing or whatever, and they went out, had a coffee and had a swim, and then checked themselves into and never came back out, you know. And it's just like, I was shocked to hear that that's happening in New Zealand as well. So
very sad.
It is. It is very sad. But all in all,
that's the problem with this whole technocratic globalist system that I see right now. Is it's very anti-human at its core, very anti-human, degrading of humanity.
Yeah.
And that has got to at some point, God is going to put an end to that, I believe.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, you mentioned carbon thing. Somebody else sent me something recently in the UK, and it was a food item, and it had on the food item, this is 8% of your daily carbon allowance. It's like, so I guess they're not enforcing the carbon allowance on people yet, but if they've got that stuff on a product, it's like, okay, it's only a matter of time till they do.
Yes. In fact, I think it's Visa or MasterCard, one of them, now has a new card out where they, you know, monitor your carbon usage. Yeah. And it all starts out voluntary with incentives. Participate in this and we'll give you 10% off your Visa card bill or something at the end of the month. Remember, it was the same way with the smart meters on the homes. Accept a smart meter and you get a little bit of a discount on your electric rate. Before you know it, they change that around, they flip the script, and they're charging you a 10% fee if you don't take the, you know, the chip or the card or whatever it is they're trying to push on us. So, you know, they start out with the carrot and it becomes the stick, right?
Yes.
That's the same old globalist tactic that we've seen over and over again. It was the same way with the vaccines. At first, they were paying people to giving them freebies or whatever to get the jab. And before you know it, they were taking their jobs away if they didn't get the jab.
Exactly. That is exactly how it works. And in many areas, we will see the same thing. So just another area, it's off the track of all of this, but that you covered is Turkey and the fact that Christians are being expelled. And this is another thing that's happening. We're seeing a persecution of Christians happening in a lot of countries now. I was shocked about seeing that in Turkey, though I shouldn't probably be, because we know Erdogan is pretty much an Islamic dictator. So that's the script, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, Turkey doesn't have many Christians left. It used to be a literal hotbed of Christianity. Yeah. You know, 400 or 500 years ago, there was probably more Christians per capita in Turkey than anywhere else in the world. You know, that was where the gospel and the seven churches of Revelation, you know, were in Turkey, and the gospel really spread like wildfire through that whole area. But in came the Muslim invasion, and they carried out in the late 1800s and early 1900s the Armenian genocide. They genocided the Christian Armenians. They genocided so many of the Greek Christians in that area of what used to be what we call Asia Minor, modern day Turkey. It's to the point now where Turkey as a nation is 99.9% Muslim. All of the Christians have long since been run off or killed. But there's still this very, very tiny minority of Christians, and they're even trying to get rid of them now. They're calling them a national security threat. And they've deported like 200 or 300 Christians from Turkey. There probably isn't more than a few thousand in the whole country. So this is very concerning, especially when we see what's going on in Africa, in Nigeria, Democratic Republic of Congo, Mozambique. Christians are on the run in all of these countries, and it's always the same one doing the chasing, the Muslims. They are used mightily by the globalists as a sort of jackhammer against Christianity worldwide. And I can't help but think we may not see our day sometime soon in the UK, in America, Europe, where we have these rising Muslim populations after decades of importing them to work in our factories. We have a lot of them in America working in meatpacking plants as refugees. They came here from all the wars that America's been involved in. You know, what a deal, eh? Our U.S. military invades these countries, you know, willy-nilly, like Iraq, Syria, Somalia, Libya, Iran, you know, and then we get a flood of refugees coming into this country, and we say, oh, you're welcome. Come work in these meat plants. Come work in a Chobani yogurt plant in Idaho, you know, which is made up of 30% refugees at that plant in southern Idaho, run by actually a Turkish owner. You know, all seems good until it's not anymore. And the enclave, it takes over the city, takes over the state. It takes a while to happen. We're starting to see it in places like Minnesota. We're starting, you know, where they have a Muslim attorney general. They have Ilhan Omar is holding a congressional seat that they've been able to elect repeatedly too, even though she's such a low integrity person. Dearborn, Michigan is taken over. Hamtramck, Michigan has an entire Muslim city council and Muslim mayor. We see this guy running in for mayor of New York City, Mandami. Where does it end? And it's all brought upon ourselves by starting these foreign wars and then welcoming the refugees that the wars create. I wrote about this in my book, Stealth Invasion, some 8 years ago now. And it's as true now as it was then, Tony.
Probably even more so. It's become even more obvious than it was then. And you had this DEI stuff where you've got to accept all these people. And in fact, if you're some sort of a minority, you'd get promoted and be the first one to get the job, you know, sort of thing. And so all of that, these things are now coming home to roost in a way in so many
countries. And what about the 800,000 Palestinian refugees? Where are they going to end up going? How much you want to bet they end up going to Europe and the United States, Canada, countries like this? It just never stops. This is the insanity of the neocons in Washington. They love to start wars. They love to use American military power just because they can. It's available to them, so they use it. Then they get to replenish the weapons and the companies that they're the military industrial complex companies who make the weapons. Their stock goes up, so the politicians who are invested in the stock make more money. It's all a disgusting, corrupt game. And then we end up with the flood of refugees. you know, and then we leave the country that we invaded in shambles. You know, look at Afghanistan today. Is it in any better shape today than it was in 2002 or 2003? Mm-hmm. When we look at Iraq today, I mean, these countries are not in any better shape. They're worse off than they were. And but yet the neocons continue to drive these narratives, these false narratives, that we need to invade this or that country and regime change, and everything will be wonderful if we just change out the governments of the countries we don't like. Well, I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. It's still the same country, no matter who the leadership is there. And now we're responsible for it. And it ends up being a big, costly mess in more ways than one. Not only do we fork over all of our blood and treasure to prop up the new government, but then we have to accept the flood of refugees to come here and take our jobs, rape our women, and cause all sorts of mischief here in the home front.
And then you have countries like Syria, where the leader that put into place there was a terrorist in the past. Yeah. And, you know, and now they bend over backwards to give this guy the red carpet. But yeah,
President Trump called him a good looking guy and a tough guy and a good looking guy. Yeah. So, you know, he was a former ISIS commander. So, yeah. You know, it's really insidious. It just, yeah. You know, and people say President Trump is anti-establishment. And he's an anti-globalist. I don't see it personally. I see a continuation of the same United States policies that we saw under Biden, under the Bushes, under the Obama. I'm talking foreign policy now. Yeah. You know, it's the same old, same old. Send in the troops. Think about the results and how we're going to deal with it later.
Yeah, and the very few things that Trump appears to be doing well to keep the conservatives and the Christians happy are all things that can be overthrown later on. Meanwhile, the things that he's doing that are really important and setting up all this digital infrastructure and all that will never be overturned. They have people on board with this whole thing, not seeing what's really happening. And this is what really concerns me so much, is that even amongst Christians, there are so many people that are blind to what's going on and just following kind of in lockstep, marching towards this digital oblivion for human rights and so on, and they think it's great.
Well, you're exactly right. That's probably my biggest frustration. I mean, I expect politicians to disappoint. That doesn't surprise me. But when I see the reaction from the base and so many people willing to give him a pass, just because he's on our team, supposedly, you know, and we need to stick it in the left's eye. And Trump is good at that, you know, when it comes to the rhetoric of, you know, always inciting, always going to the nth degree to say bad things about your political opponents, whether they're true or not. Even if they are true, I just don't see how you should waste so much energy as a political leader and head of state bashing your political opponents. I mean, why get up at 2 or 3 in the morning and send out a social media post saying how, we need to replace Thomas Massie in the primary. We need to replace Rand Paul in the primary because they don't support all of the president's policies and calling them horrible names. I happen to think Thomas Massie has probably been targeted because he has the goods on the Epstein files, and President Trump knows it.
Yeah.
And so he's desperate to get rid of Thomas Massie. But this is just not a good way to conduct politics, in my opinion.
I don't trust politicians, and I don't believe any of them are independent. I think they're all controlled from far more powerful people. And what we're having is the typical problem, reaction, solution, or Hegelian dialectic being played out. And yes. If you manage to control both sides, I mean, the best way to be the opposition is to lead it. you know, to control it, as in, I think it was Vladimir Lenin might have said something along those lines, and that is exactly what I see happening. The same globalist powers.
The goods are out on President Trump when we see him enthusiastically back and support Lindsey Graham, who's the biggest neocon warmonger probably in the entire Congress. Never met a war he didn't want to fund, never met a war he didn't want to get engaged in. And then going after anti-war Republicans like Thomas Massie and Rand Paul. This really to me speaks volumes. I don't pay attention too much to words. I look at actions. If you're going to support Lindsey Graham and he's holding a big golf classic, Trump Graham golf classic in, I believe it's going to be in Florida that, next month. This is the first on-the-ground, in-person campaign action that President Trump is going to take for the 2026 midterm elections, and it's going to be for Lindsey Graham, bringing in high-dollar Republican elites to play in a golf tournament at, you know, $20,000 a pop or some ridiculous amount to raise money for Lindsey Graham. That, to me, says everything. Lindsey Graham is nothing but a war whore. Okay. He's always been that way. He's been in the Senate too long. He's in there for, this is his fourth term, and he's probably going to win his fifth, 6 year term in the Senate. That's way too long. He's learned how to game the system and profit from it by selling Americans on going to war. This is what he is expert at. And I never really have met a Republican in South Carolina who loves the man. Most I talk to can't stand him, yet he always seems to win because he has about 10 times more money to work with than his opposition. And nobody of serious with a serious ability to win ever really even runs against him. So shame on President Trump for supporting a man like that for his fifth term in the U.S. Senate. Shameful, utterly shameful.
Yeah, well, I say I don't trust politicians. I think they're puppets largely. I don't care who they are. They're only gotten there, in my opinion, because they're part of the club anyway. And so it's time, as Christians, we just stop trying to expect politicians to be the answer or politics to be the answer. Yeah. The only answer for us is in Jesus Christ, and I guess we might as well look to wrap up on that note. If you want any last thoughts to share on that, and then also tell people where they find your articles.
I 100% agree with that last statement. I am. How can you tell, right, that I'm kind of down on politicians? Anybody who reads my stuff or hears me speak knows that I'm in agreement with what you said, that Jesus Christ is our only hope. He is the blessed hope, and him alone. And anytime you see anyone else, Christian or otherwise, trying to set a politician or anyone else up as a Messiah type figure who's going to fix this country for us or fix the world for us, that should be a red flag, plain and simple. do not listen to that person. You can find me at leohoman.com, where I'm doing a weekly roundup on Thursdays or Fridays, usually posting that once a week. And then more during the week, I post at my Substack account, which is can be found at leohoman.substack.com. Homan with two N's at the end. And I'm also on Telegram, where you can find me by searching. If you have a Telegram app on your phone, just search Leo Homan, author/journalist, and you'll see my channel on Telegram, which I also post at quite frequently.
Well, cheers. Thank you, Leo. There was an awful lot of important information, I believe, in the show again today. So I hope people will share it. Like it, obviously, click the like button and share it. So thank you for being with me again today.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you for putting up with my nasally voice dealing with this cold.
Oh, well, at least you're up and about, so hopefully you'll keep getting better.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Folks, also remember to subscribe to us at aminutetomidnight.com with midnight spelled M-I-D-N-I-T-E. Go down the right-hand side where it says enter your email to subscribe to blog. That's the right place to do it on our website. And also remember we are run 100% by donations at aminutetomidnight.com. It's much appreciated for the folks that do help us out. Couldn't do it without your help. So if you do want to donate to us, you can find a donation page at aminutetomidnight.com. And as I said, it's greatly appreciated. And remember to like and share this video. And the music used, I've written, played, and recorded. So God bless, and God willing, we'll be back with another show in a few days' time.